Hey there, SLP. You are listening to this podcast, so I know that you love to listen to podcasts. And if that is the case, then I know that you are going to love my secret private podcast, Secondary Secrets for SLPs. Its 6 short episodes will have you walking away feeling refreshed and inspired and ready to take on those challenging secondary speech students. So if you work with grades 4 through 12, and are in a planning rut or wanting some fresh new ideas to keep your students motivated, make sure you head to speechtimefun.com/secondary-secrets. You are not going to find this podcast in your iTunes podcast search browser. You can only get access by going to that link. So head to it now. It is 6 short episodes that you can listen to it in under an hour, like totally Netflix binge-worthy. I made this just for you, and I know you are going to love it. SLPs have been telling me already that it has changed their way for working with their older speech students. So head on over, again, to speechtimefun.com/secondary-secrets or use the link in the show notes, and I can't wait to hear what you think. Now let's head on to this week's episode of SLP Coffee Talk. You are listening to SLP Coffee Talk. I am your host, Hallie Sherman, and I am a licensed speech-language pathologist who is in the trenches working full-time in a public school in New York. I am the author of the blog and Teachers Pay Teachers store, Speech Time Fun, where I love helping other SLPs conquer the overwhelm and get back hours spent on prepping activities. I am here to help you be the best SLP you can be and have fun while doing it. Just like your morning cup of coffee, this podcast is just what you need to start the day or week. Let's jump into today's Coffee Talk. Hey, hey, and welcome to another episode of SLP Coffee Talk, your podcast that is here for the jolt of inspiration that you need to get your day, week, month, whenever you need it going. So today, I know I'm normally talking about older speech students, but today we're going to talk about the younger ones, but a lot of the things we're talking about today can be applied to any age level. So welcome, Tara Tuchel, to the show from Autism Little Learners.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here.
So tell everyone a little bit about yourself and your SLP journey to what you're doing now.
Sure. It's been a while since I was starting out in this career. Back in, I don't know, growing up, I always was one of those kids that played school in the summer. And so all the neighborhood kids would come over and I had gathered up all the extra worksheets from teachers and I would play school. So I always thought I'd be a teacher, but I babysat for this SLP for all the way through my teenage years. And she was just awesome. And the story she would tell about her job, I loved it. So that's what got me into the SLP world. And so I went to school in Wisconsin, got my bachelor's and master's, and then went on to start a job working with autistic children. Now, back then in the late 90s, we were saying children with autism. Now we're going through this time where things are changing. And so those of us that have been around a while are learning and keeping an open mind and adjusting to these changes. But back then, I worked at the elementary level, and that's where my love for and passion for autism started, and worked just with autistic students my entire career. And in addition to being an SLP, I've been lucky enough to work in a classroom setting. So instead of pulling kids out, I have my own communication-based classroom and co-teach with a special ed teacher.
That's amazing. You guys must have a really good relationship and like working environment if it works so well.
Absolutely.
I think that's the key to success, is having that good dynamic where you both want to learn and grow from each other. And it's not like, this is my space, this is my domain, no stepping on anyone's toes.
Yes. And developing that well-oiled machine. And it just works so well for me as an SLP to be immersed in the classroom, because then I can really see the needs of the kids with their communication and language.
And when did you decide that visuals was going to be your passion?
Probably early on. Now, back when I started, we didn't have all the nice access to clip art and visuals. We had at some point, the board maker CD, and that was about it.
And so, you can't get updates on images from a CD.
No. So we have come a long way, baby, in our accessibility to getting all kinds of visuals. And I think for me, it has brought out making visuals, making social stories and that kind of thing. It brings out the creativity and it really lets me individualize for my students. And I love that because day to day can sometimes be the same, like our schedule's the same and the routine at school, but having that creative aspect and outlet has really, I've loved it. And I've loved seeing how kids respond to those individualized visuals.
I bet people listening are wondering, how do you have the time to make such individualized things all the time?
I think the key is having several basics or foundational visuals that work for the majority of kids and then individualizing for those who need it more. So for example, I might have visuals or a social story for the toileting sequence. And it's funny because I'm probably kind of rare. I'm an SLP that's really specializes in toilet training autistic kids, but I love it. And this kind of dates way back to when I was at the elementary level. I had these two students, they're twins, and they loved country singers. They loved everything to do with country music. And they were non-speaking and they were second grade and not potty trained. And I thought, I need to incorporate their interests. That's the other thing I love to do with visuals is incorporating interests. So they loved country singers. So I made at the time, this was the best I could do. I took the image from Board Maker of peeing in the potty. So it was waist down and the little yellow dots going into the toilet. And then I went to Google Images and I went to country singers and I found pictures of them from the waist up. So I had Willie Nelson, Big and Rich, Clint Black, all these country singers. And I glued them on top of the Board Maker picture. And I made a book, Willie Nelson Pees in the Potty, Big and Rich Pee in the Potty. And they looked at the book and peed in the potty that day.
Wow. Their
mom was so happy.
Wow. I can think of just so many students, even my own kids, like, their interests, like how you can obviously not peeing in the potty, but how you can totally create like a personalized book of some sort. Like that's absolutely so creative. It's so creative.
You see what I'm saying? Like most kids, the regular peeing in the potty book would work with just the clip art stick figures. But if someone needs a little extra, then I can use their visual passions to give them that little extra where it makes sense to them.
And while yes, it probably took you some time to prepare it, the reward was so worth it, clearly. So.
Absolutely. It's like, how can you not do stuff like that? How can you not? So I would say time-wise, of course, you can't do that for every single situation or opportunity or child. But when you see something not working, that's when you go, okay, I think I need to individualize this a little more and maybe add in some of those special interests or passions.
I love it. How can you utilize visuals to increase independence in some other tasks other than peeing in the potty?
I think, you know, we know that visuals are a preferred modality for a lot of people who are autistic. Not everybody. That's not one size fits all, but a lot use visuals. And I think the way that you can give them the opportunity, I should say, to be more independent is to give them predictable routines. And so, yes, we can structure the day in the same way every time, but there's always things that interfere. We need to have visuals that will show them exactly what their day looks like, or even within the day, what routines look like. So when I go to wash my hands, if my visual schedule says wash hands, when I go there, there's a picture sequence of exactly what I do when I wash my hands. So it makes it super predictable. Every time I go there, whatever sink I go to, this is what I do. And that just creates less anxiety and gives kids a little more ownership because they maybe will not be as dependent on us for telling them what to do or helping them. Once they learn that sequence, they've got it.
So true. And we always want to reduce our need for verbal prompting and cueing. This allows them to cue themselves.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing is that's nice is you can take away that verbal then and start pointing to each picture as they're able to do each piece of the sequence on their own.
Love it. What advice have you given to parents on how to incorporate these visuals in the home?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. And I always like to say at first, I see teachers a lot of times get frustrated or are like, I don't know what to do. They don't want to use this at home. So first I say, give grace to parents. They have their whole household, their family. If they're not ready or they don't want to do it yet, that's fine. We can do it at school. We can build that routine. And then when they're ready, it'll just be easier to implement at home. No big deal. If you have a parent that wants to participate and like collaborate, go full force, whatever they're ready for. I'm always, when they say, oh yeah, I'd like to do a visual schedule at home. Okay, give me a list. Give me a list of all the things and I will make it, laminate it. It might take a little time. It's not going to be in one day, but that is one of the best things. I guess that's one of the best pieces of advice is when they're ready, go for it, but you can't make it happen.
And also having that dialogue with them about, okay, hey, when is this child getting frustrated at home? Or what are some routines that you want to build in? Because you can't assume that everyone's home structure is the same. Can't imagine that they're all sitting down together at the dinner table. Like things are going on. So
that's such a good point because every family has different routines and different ways that they do things. And sometimes that is the way in versus it's very overwhelming. Think of educators going, oh my gosh, implementing visual schedules. That's a lot of work. And so sometimes just starting with those routines. So I had a parent once, this is when we were all online over the pandemic. And she said, it was a simple routine, but it was a big deal to them. She said, he won't let me comb his hair. And so I said, okay, tell me more. Probably talked 5 minutes. And then I said, okay, I'll send you a visual. And I had never seen this child in person. So I didn't know for sure if it would work, but I have general ideas. And it was just a simple like cue card. And it had a picture of a little boy from the shoulders up and then a piece of Velcro. And I put numbers 1 through 10. And so she could put on 2. Okay, we're going to do 2 combs. 1, 2, all done. I said, make it really quick because we don't know sensory wise what's going on with what's making that difficult. But if he can predict it through this visual way, and then he started putting on the 3, the 4. She, by the next week when we met, she said, he's already up to 10. And so what should I do? I'm like, get a post-it out and keep going for however many comb times you want to comb his hair. But he was great now.
I love it. That's so amazing. Just so simple things of connecting with the families and providing them with that visual that they're not trained to think of. And that's so simple as starting small. That's the best. That's such great advice.
And if you can give them a couple of quick wins with visuals that you know work, some of your staples, then you get the buy-in. It's like any of us. Once we have some buy-in and we see something working, we're more likely to use it.
So true. Now, are visuals something that should be in place forever, or should we be looking at ways to remove them or fade them out?
Yeah, awesome question. I love this one. So I tell in my visual schedules course, I tell people that we get rid of visuals when you're ready to get rid of your to-do list, your grocery list, your day planner, your Google Calendar, those are all visuals, right? But they're written. So as kids get older, if they're reading, let's move, of course, to written, something that's not as cumbersome or hard to organize. So we can move on to a written format and just tweak it. But we all rely on visuals.
That's so true. Oh my goodness, if I didn't have a grocery list, when I said my husband, I'm like, that was not on the list. Stick to the list.
I know. When I bring a list to the grocery store too, I have to cross each thing off or else I'll forget it. Really reliant on visuals.
Seriously. Oh my goodness. That's such great like advice. And now I'm curious, what is your philosophy or is there evidence behind there's so many different symbols, clip arts out there? Does it matter which one you select? Is it okay to mix and match based on what you have? What's your feeling on it?
I talk about that in my course too. And as far as I've seen, I don't have any evidence pointing like real pictures versus those stick people versus clip art. I just know anecdotally from what I've seen in my classroom. So usually I'll start with, used to be board maker, and now I made my own set of visuals because I needed an update and something that was a little more realistic. So I have my own visual schedules with clip art. So they look more like kids versus stick figures. And I thought, how are they going to do switching from the stick figures to that? And it's been fine. So I think, like when I was talking about social stories and starting with a foundation or a basis, same thing with visuals. Pick one, start there. If it's not resonating with a child, that's when you need to start looking at, okay, what else should I do? So if I have a student that the pictures are just not making sense, they're having a hard time looking at them, I might go to real pictures, not for all 12 kids in my classroom, but for that one, see if that resonates or they understand that more. And if that's still too abstract, then we can go down the line, talking like how abstract the symbol is, down the line to object schedule. We think of this like a lot of young kids, neurotypical kids, the parents might give them the diaper, show them the diaper, and they know that means we're going to the bathroom, we're going to change a diaper. So something like that, different things that symbolize something. So it might be a little chair from a dollhouse, might mean group time because we're going to go sit in the chair. Marker might mean, oh, we're going to this certain table to do art. I have these little toilet, a little toilet, mini toilet from a dollhouse might mean we're going to the bathroom.
I love that. Like using real figures, just anything to represent something and making it part of the routine and not just doing it once and hoping like it works.
Yeah. And especially with kids that like aren't understanding the pictures right away, that kind of tells me they're going to need a lot of, like you just said, a lot of repetition. Your goal and where you want to move towards, but you need to give it enough time.
So it's true. Can you share a little more about how you use visuals with literacy and book activities and like adaptive books?
Yeah, that's been my favorite this past school year. I've always had some books that were adapted and used them, but last year I immersed myself in it more because I was like, I need something where I can read a story and get my students more engaged, because I have 3 and 4 year olds who are autistic. And usually if they're in my class, they're non-speaking. And so a lot of times, like just reading a book to them, their attention is not there for me just verbally. I always think maybe I sound like the Charlie Brown teacher, like blah, blah, blah. And they don't know, what is she talking about? So how can I make it more interactive? And so I took the idea of adapted books, which we all know and have used, but I brought them just to board books. So the board books tend to be much simpler language. They're repetitive and brightly colored pictures. Plus they're more durable because with my little 3-year-olds, I need something more durable. So I made a whole set last year for each theme that I did throughout the year. We do a different theme every 3 weeks. And so by the end of the year, I had this whole set of themes with 6 books per theme. And my paras were like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing ever. Because kids that we weren't sure if they would take to that, like maybe they're not matching picture to picture yet, they started getting, okay, I put the picture in on the Velcro. So it was like, we were getting matching skills. We're working on vocabulary, lots of those kind of books. You can work on animal sounds or exclamatory, that kind of thing. So it was so awesome. I'm going to make more. I loved having those.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Even like following directions. Now you're getting me thinking, because I'm having students on my kids, so they're older. But I might be stealing some of my kids from home, their board books, and bringing them to work.
And I know people do the paper books too, because you can put some packing tape on there and then the Velcro, and then it won't pull the paper apart every time you pull the picture out. But for me, I just need the more durable. But older kids, for sure, you can adapt any book.
And they're easy to wipe down as well. So
yeah, exactly.
A little Clorox wipe, spray, and it's not going to ruin any pages or get any wrinkles. The book.
Sometimes, let's say I have a zoo board book, a polar bear or something like that. If you have any of the like little figurines, the little animals, like the little zebra or the little, the polar bear, sometimes for kids too, as we open each page, if it's one ant or two animals on each page, we'll match the figurine to it too. So matching the object to picture is pretty fun.
I love it. So you guys, like you make these things once and you'll have them year after year and you can use it over and over again. Just because you use it in one session doesn't mean, okay, I can't use it again with that student.
Yes.
They can get more out of it. They need the repetition. They don't care that you did it last week. Like they want to see it again. So Absolutely. It is okay.
Repetition is key, I think. Like I've never seen any of my students get sick of a certain activity that they like being repeated. And the other thing with these too is you could make a little checkout kit and send them home for kids to do a night or two because they once they get it. So I had one student that loved the polar bear and sent that home and his dad had never seen him like go through and read. It was from memory, but he read the story. He knew the story and enjoyed it. And his mom said, oh my gosh, dad was so happy to see that.
Oh my God, that's so amazing. I love that idea of a checkout system, like a little SLP library. It's so amazing. Can you share more? Because you have such creative ideas with like your all done bucket and your weight mat. How do you use visuals to teach students these tricky abstract concepts?
Yeah. So I have, it's called a visual support starter set. And these are all the key foundational, I should say, visuals that I use in my classroom. And they accumulated over the years. A lot of them, I can't even say like, where did I get that idea from? Some of them I can, but working with different people. And anyway, these are the ones that I see work over and over with the majority of my students. So the all done bucket in my classroom, we call it the magical tool. And when I started in early childhood 10 years ago, the team I work with, they had that implemented already. So the special ed teacher I co-teach with already was using it. And it is truly magical. We still 10 years later call it magical because we're always surprised by how well it works. So you just need a bucket or a bin, something like in the classroom, it's usually like a little bigger than a shoebox. It doesn't have to be huge, but you don't want it to be tiny. And then on the back, you just have a picture of all done. So I have in my starter set, which is free, there's one with the universal no symbol, or there's an option with a boy using the all done sign. So you could use either one of those, but it's not even like the symbol on it that's important. It's this predictable routine that you're building. Like you were saying, that repetition over and over, that's where you create the magic. So if I have a student, let's say they worked with me at a table and now they're playing with cars, I'm going to set a timer. And I usually just use like the kitchen timer that beeps because my students struggle with joint attention and shifting their attention. And so if I set the time timer, they're typically not referencing it. They're very object focused on what's in front of them. So we build this routine with the timer and I'll say 3 minutes, then all done. And I'll have the all done bucket near. And then I'll, okay, 2 more minutes, then all done. And then when it beeps, I present the all done bucket. And then I might sing, if they're learning it, clean up, the cleanup song. We put the things in and it doesn't always flow that well at first, but we'll help clean up and then remove the all done bucket. And I'm not kidding. When it clicks and kids start getting this, I don't even have to ask them to put things in it. The timer beeps, I have it near them and they just clean up and they put their stuff away. And this, even if it's a preferred, so-called preferred activity or toy, it's unbelievable how well it works.
Guys, a bucket, a visual and a timer. That's all it is to teach students that like time to clean up. I love it.
And you can see it, like you build a predictable routine. And that's the big thing with it. Same thing with the weight mat that you had mentioned. The weight mat I implemented a couple of years ago, and it has turned out to be one of the best things ever. And I've heard from other teachers that have downloaded it and put it into action and parents at home. I just got a message yesterday talking about how much this has transformed their classroom, because with a weight mat, you literally print out the piece of paper that says weight on it and has two hands, and you laminate it or put it in a page protector and you set it next to you on the table. So whether it's snack time or you're working with kids or maybe even on the floor somewhere. And so let's say my student, so a lot of our students love to hold objects like in both hands all the time. And you've probably seen that. So many objects. And I'm totally good with that. If it helps them be comfortable and less anxious, like hold the dinosaur, hold 10 little cars, however many you can fit in your hands. But sometimes when you're trying to work on certain things, those get in the way. Because you can't practice fine motor tasks when you have your hands full of cars. So the weight map, we just simply show them at first, and it might be really quick at first. Okay, dinosaur's going to wait right here on the weight mat. And we do one little thing. Okay, there, you can have them back. So we're teaching this trust and this predictable routine. So students learn, like, it's right here. It's not the all done bucket. It's not getting taken away, and you're going to get it back. So it's not going to be a big deal. And so once they learn that through that repetition, it works wonders. I have a three-year-old. He was my youngest student this year. So he had just turned three in the fall. We introduced this, and he was one that would be holding stuff, carrying it around. And if anyone even tried to direct him to put it down, it would have been a meltdown. So he was like, okay, you wonder, is he going to get this? Is he going to understand it? Because he really wanted to hold it all the time. By April, we were going over to one of the tables to work, and he went ahead of me, reaches up on the windowsill, grabs the weight mat by himself, and puts his things on it. And I was like, what just happened? Like, he got it and he trusted, I'm going to get this back as soon as we're done doing our fun activity.
That's so amazing. That's like the best feeling in the world. That's like
free, non-speaking, and is really attached, and it worked.
See, guys listening, this can work for any age with any students, even your most challenging ones. Just something so simple, just keeping it visual, keeping it predictable, and tons of repetition and practice.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. I love it.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Where can everyone learn more about you and everything you have to offer?
Yeah, I'm Autism Little Learners on every social media chat, whatever you want to call it, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. I do a lot of free trainings on Facebook. So that's a big place you can find me. I feel like if you need to DM me and ask me a few questions, Instagram is the place to be, but Autism Little Learners, and my website's autismlittlelearners.com.
And can you share more about your course and your membership?
Thank you. So the Visual Schedules Made Easy course is for parents and educators. And that's the thing that's evolved with Autism Little Learners. I thought I was going to be there to make products for teachers, but it ended up being something where parents really wanted the information and the resources too. So I said, we are all in real life, one big team working like on IEPs and stuff. So let's do it here. So the course is for both parents and educators, and it's step-by-step how to do all the things you asked me about. How do you pick the symbols, the length of the schedule? Where do you find the pictures? All of those things are included in the course, and I would love to have you. It opens twice a year. So if you go to my website, you can get on the wait list. And then my membership offers monthly products. So you want your teacher and you want resources to be able to implement with your young students, that is the place to be.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And thank you for letting us know all the things that you're offering and have available to help everyone's jobs and lives be a little bit more easy. So thank you so much for sharing your knowledge all about working with our autistic students and visuals. And I know everyone's going to get that jolt of inspiration that they need to get their day, week, month, school year going. And I always end my episodes with a joke. How does a scientist freshen her breath?
Oh my gosh. I have no idea.
With experiments.
Oh my gosh. Mint popped into my head, but I never would have gotten that one.
See? Language. I love using jokes to build rapport and build vocabulary. So thank you so much, Tara. Everyone go check her out. Say hi on social media. Check out her YouTube channel. Check out her websites. And until next week, everyone, stay out of trouble. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of SLP Coffee Talk. It means the world to me that you're tuning in each and every week and getting the jolt of inspiration you need. You can find all of the links and information mentioned in this episode at my website, speechtimefun.com. Don't forget to follow the show so you don't miss any future episodes. And while you're there, it would mean the world to me if you would take a few seconds and leave me an honest review. See you next week with another episode full of fun and inspiration from one SLP to another. Have fun, guys.